I'm Julia Scott. Paul Perkovic and Eric Trefelner spent their lives together, traveling, planning their next trip, until some unwelcome news sent them off course to a place neither man wanted to go. For the BBC World Service, this is Bon Voyage. It's March 2nd, 2012. Paul Perkovic and Eric Trefelner are getting a very special tour of the Palace of the Legion of Honor in San Francisco, one of the city's fine arts museums.
This is the Florence School Theater. It was built with the building in 1924. It holds 316 seats.
Also on the walkthrough are a band leader, a caterer, a photographer, and a sound engineer, all hired by Paul and Eric. The preparation will be flawless. It has to be. The party is 2 weeks away. Events manager Donnie Lamas goes over last-minute details with Eric.
Anything that you have in the theater that needs to be changed, just email to Rich Rice.
I told him we would need a podium up here. I said that we would probably have some chairs on stage for people who are going to speak, and that we were going to bring some flowers to decorate the front of the stage.
Great.
In 2 weeks, hundreds of guests will dance the night away to a live swing band and cabaret act, drink champagne, eat oysters and caviar, and take photos with their hosts.
The dress code for the party is as you please.
What are you guys going to be wearing?
Haven't decided.
I'm going to see if I can still fit in my tuxedo.
You may be thinking this sounds like a wedding, but Paul Perkovic and Eric Trefelner have already married each other 4 times over, as gay marriage became legal in different states, twice in California, once in Massachusetts, and on a Caribbean cruise. And the party they're throwing isn't for a birthday or a wedding anniversary. Paul is dying of pancreatic cancer, and Eric, his partner of 36 years, is giving him a bon voyage party. Eric is about to spend upwards of $250,000 on a single evening, an evening commemorating not only the end of a life, but the end of their life together.
I'm Paul Perkovic. My body has sort of treated me pretty well my whole life up until when it surprised me with this tumor.
Hi, I'm Eric Trefelner. I'm Paul's husband and a physician, and I'm part of this process.
Well, welcome to our home.
Paul and Eric live at the edge of the Pacific Ocean, just south of San Francisco. Their house is eccentric enough to double as a natural history museum, stuffed with taxidermy, fossils, and other wonders from their trips around the world. Eric gives me the tour.
We have all kinds of real things. We have a Cape buffalo, we have a moose, we have a hyena, a Himalayan ibex, a warthog, deer, bear. We have Spot. Spot is a 12-foot alligator that likes to curl up in front of the fireplace.
I actually like the mountain lion sitting on the coffee table. I think he's quite a handsome beast to have around.
My favorite piece is Paul, and it's also a handsome animal. We'll have him stuffed, and he'll just join the crowd.
Paul and Eric met in 1977 at a Harvard gay club event. Eric was only 18 when he spotted Paul and fell in love.
And what did he say after I said I loved him, wanted to spend the rest of my life with him? I was like, yeah, I'm not interested in a relationship.
But Eric is a very persuasive young man, and even now he's a very persuasive older gentleman. And so he got his way, as he often does. And we've had such wonderful times together.
30 seconds. Until it boils. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Isn't there a boil water spot on there?
Their time together has taken on a different meaning now that Paul has cancer. The doctor who spotted the tumor was Eric, Paul's husband, who's a radiologist. In July 2011, Paul checked into the hospital with stomach problems.
They wheeled me in and were looking for gastric outlet blockage. What was causing my stomach not to empty? And Eric was down watching the images come up on the monitor as they did the scan, and I could see him, and his face sort of suddenly got this horrible expression on it. And I knew that something was very wrong. And he came in as soon as they were finished with the study and said, it looks very bad.
At first, Eric couldn't believe what he saw. He checked the images twice.
It was a horrible moment. I immediately could see. And I could see that there was no hope, there was nothing to be done, and that it was basically all over. And I didn't want to say anything to him, and I didn't want him to see that on my face, so it's unfortunate. So I just went over and held Paul's hand, and I started crying.
Paul had a tumor the size of a tennis ball in his pancreas, and it had wrapped itself around an artery, which meant it was inoperable. Paul's doctors gave him 6 to 8 weeks. If they'd been right, he would have been dead a long time ago. But they were wrong. Paul had surgery to bypass his small intestine so he could eat again. Chemotherapy stopped his tumor from growing. And all of a sudden, Paul and Eric had months of time ahead of them. The question was, time for what?
Well, it's not as if we've put off death forever, but at least it may be put on hold for a little bit longer than we had anticipated, which is, of course, good news because I rather like being alive.
Paul Perkovic and Eric Trefelner are well off. They've lived in style for 36 years. Eric is 54. Paul is 63 and a retired computer scientist. They've visited 77 countries, explored volcanoes, and seen the wonders of the world. When they realized that Paul was going to die, they thought he should go out in style, too.
Paul originally wanted just to have a small party on a Sunday afternoon and invite people to come by during the day and drop in and say, you know, goodbye. And that just seemed sad and dreary to me.
Eric conceived the Bon Voyage party as an epic send-off slated for March 17, 2012. There would be hundreds of guests, glamour, dancing, and speeches. It would be Paul's Gatsby moment, with the 1920s cruise ship theme to match.
We want people to come to this party because they know that there's going to be, you know, this great swing orchestra with a great jazz vocalist and good food and free wine, and we want everyone to have a good time. Because you know what? You know, the other choice is a funeral. And, you know, funerals are depressing. Wakes are depressing.
Paul and Eric hate sad endings. The party will be a panacea, or so they hope. But in the months ahead, they'll discover that death has its own agenda. Death will spread fear, resentment, and despair, as destructively as the cancer in Paul's body.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. I have a 3:15 appointment for the radiation prep. Paul Perkovic?
It's December, and death has been pushed off the table and replaced with party planning.
I can't feel the tumor. You know, I've tried to feel it. I sort of know it's there intellectually because I've seen images of it. I have indications of where the disease is going to be going, but I may not have accepted the reality of that yet. I don't know.
Eric thinks about Paul dying every day, but Paul doesn't like to discuss it. Even hospital visits are occasions for party chatter. Paul walks around handing out invitations to the radiation staff.
If you'd be interested, we're having a party on March 17th, and I'd like to invite the people that have kept me alive until then.
Very good.
Privately, though, both men are in mourning. Eric, the physician, has spent an entire career around people dying of cancer, but losing his husband is another matter. He and Paul do their crying alone in separate parts of the house.
I used to always wish that Paul would die first so that I, being a doctor, would be there to take care of him. But now I wish it was me that was dying so that he wouldn't die and that I wouldn't see him die.
Eric knows the numbers by heart. Pancreatic cancer has the lowest survival rate of all cancers. Beyond the first year, it's 20%, and patients usually suffer before they die.
Paul will be feeling really good, and he'll say, you know, I'm going to beat this, and, you know, I'm going to live longer than you expected. I think those are the closest we get to talking about death.
How do you feel when he says things like that?
It makes me sad, because I don't think it's true.
Between his diagnosis in July and the following February, Paul undergoes chemo and radiation therapy. Then the couple goes on an actual cruise a month before the Bon Voyage party in March. Party planning hasn't been as fun as they thought it would be. The current of death is seeping in, and it's exposed problems in their relationship that run as deep as icebergs in the North Atlantic. Eric is angry over how few romantic gestures Paul has made for him over the years, a sore point in their relationship.
I'm embarrassed to, you know, discuss this. It's just I was hurt very much on this trip that we took by things that he said and did. We're spending all this money on this huge party. And I've been asking Paul for the last 8 months that I would like him to do something special for me that shows me that he loves me and cherishes me. And all I got on our, you know, wedding anniversary was a Hallmark card. And I asked him why, and he said he couldn't think of anything else. So that's been very painful.
The cruise that Eric hoped would be cheerful and romantic has the opposite effect. When the ship docks in Miami, Eric leaves Paul with some friends. One day, Paul wakes up in a hotel and Eric's clothes are gone. Eric has flown home without warning. When Paul gets home, Eric's not speaking to him.
I've tried sending him flowers and he's sort of rejected them as, you know, an attempt to show remorse or guilt or, you know, not enough. I wrote a note. I got a rose, left the rose and the note out for him. He broke the rose up and threw it across the room, and he took the note and he threw it across the room. He still hasn't read the note.
Paul and Eric let me tell their story because they wanted to show what coping with death is actually like. What they didn't anticipate was that Paul's cancer would come so close to killing their relationship, too.
He told me last night that if I weren't dying, he would want to divorce me.
Eric is angry with Paul, but he's also angry at what's killing Paul.
You know, all this has come about after his cancer. You start evaluating your life, and you start thinking there were things that were never spoken about and addressed, and you're trying to get them resolved, and it's just not happening, or it's happening in the way you don't want it.
I'm wondering if he's trying to make me see what it feels like to feel abandoned. You know, there may be some of that going on here.
Paul and Eric have been trying to choreograph a death. They wanted to make it seem as graceful as sailing away. They weren't expecting a hurricane.
I want him to know that I really love him and that I always have. And maybe I don't know how to show it the way he expects. Maybe his expectations are too high, or maybe my capabilities are too low. But I want him to get that message. And he's feeling like he's been cheated, that he's given his whole life to me, and now it's all for naught because he won't have the time that we had expected in our old age to spend together.
Paul and Eric patched things up a few days before the party, but their relationship will be turbulent from now on.
I was very angry at Paul, and I was very upset. It was sort of eating away at me, and I just decided I had to let that go, that I would much prefer to be unhappy with Paul than unhappy without Paul.
Nearly 500 guests descend on the Bon Voyage party on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. They're expecting to find Paul in poor health and grateful to see him at all.
Are you an elected official at the moment? That is, she doesn't want to give you that.
Instead, they find him working the welcome line in his tux, pinning on name tags and pushing guests toward the dance floor.
Hi, Peter.
I'm Sarah.
Hi, Sarah. Nice to meet you.
Have a photograph taken if you'd like.
Oh, yes. Okay. We will. Thank you, Paul.
Some guests have come from as far away as London to say goodbye to Paul. His family has flown in from Missouri.
All those people that want to share moments with Paul can go down into the theater. We're going to start that in about 10 minutes.
Paul didn't want any eulogies. After all, he's still alive and sitting in the audience. So for nearly 2 hours, Paul listens as people tell stories about him. A lot of funny stories, but no sad ones. Paul tells some stories, too.
That's my yearbook picture from St. Louis Country Day School. And there's another photo there which shows my shirt sort of torn open. And where there should be a heart, there's a calculator. And sad to say, when I got interested in computers years and years ago, I sort of fell in love with those. And I would be the guy that you shove pizzas under the door and get software out the other end. Still today, if I had not met Eric, he's made my life as wonderful as it is. And I thank him for that very much.
Paul and Eric got their wish. They've taken what is essentially a funeral and made it feel like a wedding reception. That's not how their guests were expecting to feel. Some of them weren't sure how to feel.
And this is like a very out there flamboyant gesture, you know, to have a big party like this. And I'm not a flamboyant person, so it makes you think, well, when I go, what's it going to be like? If I have like a couple of months, you know, while I'm still physically able to enjoy the things, then what would I do? I don't think it would look like this, but it would look like, I don't know what it would be like, but at least I get to think about it now.
It is not a downer kind of event at all. I wasn't quite sure what it would be. I thought there might be some of that, but there is not any of that. It is a celebration.
And a lot of us don't have a choice, and Paul has a choice, and I would love to do it this way. It is first class. It's so incredibly unselfish and giving that it's something I'll never forget.
I think everybody who's here is very moved by this and in a way saddened by it. But it's a great example of sort of living in the moment and knowing that every life is a full, complete life.
As guests say goodbye, Paul is so upbeat that people even start to joke about having another Bon Voyage party next year.
Hi, guys.
Oh, so good to see you.
Spent some time with Eric?
Yes, we did.
We've run across so many friends from the Harvard days.
It's so nice to see you looking so well.
You are just looking well.
We're so happy.
But you're also just being yourself.
I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Everyone gets to say goodbye to Paul, but make it sound like, see you later. From now on, their memories will be flavored with champagne. Not so for Eric. He knows his last memories of Paul will be very different. By summer, Paul is at the hospital again.
Here we are on Wednesday, July 11th, 2012, and I'm scheduled for another visit with my oncologist, Dr. Margaret Tempero.
4 months after the party, Paul gets some very bad news. Dr. Tempero tells Paul that the cancer has spread from his pancreas to his liver, and the liver now has not one, but six tumors, one the size of a golf ball.
We were concerned that something like this could happen.
Dr. Tempero recommends a 3-drug chemotherapy regimen. It has a lot of side effects: nausea, fatigue, diarrhea, and losing his hair. Paul keeps his emotions in check.
And if we don't do it, the tumors, I guess, we now have six in the liver, would just keep growing until I have liver failure?
That's a possibility. Another thing that can happen is that patients get just such a big disease burden that they just stop eating.
Well, this would buy some time, perhaps.
Could buy significant time.
Well, press one, please.
Oh, why did I press three? I don't know why I pressed three.
People speak of the best way to die. Someone who's dying of cancer can tell you there's no such thing. There's only the major nightmare and the slightly lesser nightmares. All year, Paul has worked steadily on party planning, taking trips, updating his cancer blog, and going through his files. In all that time, he has never focused on dying. That's changed.
I suppose it's what an inmate on death row sort of must feel like, because you know it's coming, you just don't know when.
In this example, are you the inmate or is Eric the inmate?
We both are the inmate.
I ask Paul about his biggest fear. I expect him to say dying, but he doesn't.
My biggest fear is that I'll die and that Eric will feel that I never loved him the way he needed to be loved. And that he'll feel that his life was wasted too.
Paul chose chemotherapy to give him more time with Eric, who has taken a leave from work to take care of Paul. Eric feels differently about chemo and disagrees with Paul's decision.
This will sound horrible, but I would much rather Paul had been hit by a bus than go through this. I mean, that's quick and painless and everything, and this is slow and painful. And he's not even that sick yet.
I could still arrange to be hit by a bus.
Paul and Eric are assiduous planners. They've been trying to stage manage a death. But just because you've said goodbye doesn't mean death will oblige with a quick and painless ending.
So, you're not ready to die?
I'd rather not. I enjoyed a beautiful sunset last night, and I was thinking, you know, how much I enjoy these beautiful sunsets and what a wonderful world it is.
Paul is going to die, and, you know, even when we're happy, it's a sad moment because I'll never see him happy again, and I won't be as happy again.
Can a person come to terms with death if they know it's coming? Or is that a notion invented by the people left behind?
And you worry about yourself. You know, I'm worrying about Paul, but all of a sudden I'm thinking about me. What's going to happen to me? What is my life going to be like? Who's going to love me? And those are hard things. And they sound selfish at the same time.
Are you worried about Eric?
Yes. And I've told him that I want him to find a new boyfriend after I'm gone. After, you know, a discreet time when he's mourning and wearing black. He's such a wonderful person, and he's got a great business, and he's so intelligent and articulate, and he would make a fine husband for someone.
My grandmother lost her husband in her early 40s, and she never remarried, and we all told her she should, but she said she would never love anyone else. She lived to 94, and she never did.
I can't control what he does. And he said that he could never love anyone else.
No, I couldn't. My poor dear.
Paul Perkovic died November 26, 2012, in Eric Trefelner's arms at their home in Montara, California. For the BBC World Service, I'm Julia Scott.